welcome to 8 More Miles, the Louisville Metro Council District 8 podcast. This is Councilman Brandon Cohn. We are podcasting live on Thursday, August 17th from our studio at Curtis Creative. And my guest today is the new commander of the LMPD 5th Division, Major Aubrey Gregory. Major Gregory, welcome and thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me, Councilman.
I mentioned that you are the new commander. Our former commander, Shara Parks, has just been promoted to Assistant Chief of Police, and we miss Assistant Chief Parks, and we wish her the best in her career. But we're really excited to have you leading the 5th Division, which includes all of Metro Council District 8. And I'm excited to have this opportunity for listeners to get to know you a little bit better. So since you're a new face, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been on the job so far, what you've done, and what you're learning?
Sure. So I started with the old Louisville Police Department almost 19 years ago. We're creeping very close to that 19-year mark. I started off amazingly in this division as a probationary officer. I rolled with the FTO for a few months, and then as was customary back then, you went to a different area of town to continue your training. And so I went to the West End, what's now the 2nd Division, and finished my training there and served about 8.5 years for the citizens in the West End. Was promoted the first time and got to come to what's now the 4th Division. Germantown, Schnitzelburg, Old Louisville, U of L campus, that area. I worked that for about 4.5 years, got promoted again. Was lucky enough to go back out to the West End. Served there as a lieutenant for about 2.5, almost 3 years, and was transferred to what's called the Special Events Unit. And so the Special Events, if you draw a permit to do anything in the city of Louisville, anything from a small little neighborhood block party that requires two police officers to block a street, all the way to the Kentucky Derby Festival, Ironman, music festivals, and everything in between. I was responsible, or one of four lieutenants that was responsible for reviewing those, organizing them, putting together and running them, doing the operations the day of. And then just a couple weeks ago, I got promoted.
Congratulations again.
Thank you. And the chief asked me to come serve in the 5th Division, which I was humble and honored to do. And so now I'm here, back in the 5th, trying to help the citizens of the 5th Division.
Well, it sounds like your past experiences are a good fit for the Greater Highlands area because you've worked in a variety of sort of urban neighborhoods in the core of the city. Mm-hmm. Again, you have that specialized training in special events. Obviously, the Baxter Avenue, Bardstown Road corridor sees events of all shapes and sizes. We see festivals in our parks. We see parades. And so it's going to be very beneficial to have you here for some of those things. You said you've been on the job for a couple of weeks, and obviously anybody that starts a new job knows that it takes some time to get adjusted, to see sort of what's going on. So what have you been doing when you show up on your first day of work? How do you start to sort of review the 5th Division and review the operations and take a look at the area that you are now responsible for keeping safe? Where do you even start?
Well, the first thing you do is you start to get to know the people. The first thing you got to do is you got to get to know the communities, the neighborhoods, the people who live in and work there. The numbers, the data, and all that, it paints a picture, but it's a very broad picture. If you want to know intimately about what people's concerns are, what their fears are, and what they're happy with, so that you continue to do that, you got to get to know the people.
So when you say the people, you don't just mean the officers that are serving under you. You mean people.
No,
you mean residents. You mean shop owners. You mean
absolutely
visitors, shoppers.
The clergy, the shop owners, the people who live there, the people who work there, the politicians who represent those people. You have got to begin by starting and creating relationships with those people. And talking to them and being open to them and giving them the opportunity to express to you, me, what their concerns are and again, what they're happy with.
And so what are they saying?
Well, by and large, we're good. We have been very blessed that this community is very established, very involved, and this isn't a new phenomenon. It's been going on for decades. And because of this, by and large, they're happy. We do have some concerns. Specifically, we have which was unique for me, 18.5 years ago, we didn't have a large homeless population that had moved into that Bardstown Road, Baxter Avenue corridor. I wasn't prepared for it. I hadn't seen it. Again, 18.5 years ago, it didn't exist. But I've begun to hear some concerns about the number of homeless. Not just crime that tends to happen around homeless populations, but also the care of those people and trying to make their lives better so they can, you know, no longer be homeless and living on the streets.
Sure.
So that's one of the biggest concerns I've heard time and time again. And then car break-ins. We are a very large entertainment district that is immediately surrounded by residents. So unlike 4th Street Live downtown, where there aren't a lot of residents that live around an entertainment district, we literally cross an alleyway and there's a home there, there's a residence there. So it's one of those things, it drives and crime, it pulls people to it. When there's alcohol, there's problems. It's just that happens. And so you get to hear some of those. And it's not unique just to Barstown or Baxter Avenue. We have the same thing along parts of Frankfort Avenue as well.
Well, we'll drill down on some of the issues that I hear about as well as a Metro Kelts person.
Sure.
People obviously call me when they have concerns about crime in addition to into informing police. You mentioned that things here are sort of generally good and that's the feedback that you're getting from the people you're talking to. And it may surprise some listeners that the 5th Division, and I should pause for a moment just to say that all of Jefferson County, just like we're broken down into 26 Metro Council districts, we're broken down into 8 different police divisions across the map. Yep. And then there's also a 9th Mobile Division, which is not tied to any... Well, is it still called the 9th Mobile?
It's still called the 9th Mobile Division, and they help the 8th Patrol Divisions.
Okay, right. So they're not tied geographically to any space. But our 5th Division on a map, and you can see a map of what the 5th Division looks like, it generally covers all of District 8 and then all of District... or most of District 9, which is the Frankfort Avenue corridor where Councilman Bill Hollander represents, and then also smaller parts of District 4 where Barbara Sexton Smith represents, and I also believe maybe even District 7 as we start to go.
Yeah, and we even touch a very small piece of District 10. We got a little bit of that, and we do have a little bit of 7. So we have a couple little pieces, but 8 and 9 make up the vast majority.
Sure, so but the 5th Division is responsible for all of District 8.
Yes.
What I was going to say is it might surprise some listeners because... people are always concerned about crime, and rightfully so, because there's still a large amount of it in our society, that the 5th Division has the lowest crime rate, the lowest amount of number of crimes, and the lowest amount of actual calls for service out of any of the 8 divisions in the entire county.
Yes,
and that was surprising to me just because I guess I had the impression that, for example, you know, the far eastern suburbs would have lower crime for some reason, but that's not the case. Is that something that surprises you, or can you explain that?
It does. You know, being an old city cop, we had always been told that crime's higher inside the Waterston Expressway. That was just this urban legend that we were kind of fed and we fed into, and lo and behold, that's not the case. That's not the case at all. The 5th Division, as you say, is the lowest crime per capita. We have the lowest reported crime, the lowest crime per capita than any other of the police divisions. And, knock wood, we currently have the highest crime reduction from the previous year. So yes, we have a very, of all the other divisions, we do very, very well.
Now, folks might remember that the mayor's office, for example, had announced some, you know, 6-month or 8-month statistics showing that crime is down across the city generally. And but on a whole, if we zoom out a little bit, crime is up across the city and including the 5th Division in certain categories over the past several years. For example, on my website, I have a crime information page where you can see the number of incidents for some of the part 1 UCR crimes. Those are the property crimes and the violent crimes that the FBI keeps track of. And so, for example, you know, if you look at the last 3 or 4 years, the overall number of thefts are sort of on an upward trend overall. Or like you mentioned, motor vehicle break-ins or auto thefts is a big thing. Is there an explanation for the bump that, even though we're making some progress now in the short term, over the last several years, what is really affecting the crime that people might have been noticing building for the last couple of years?
So the I wish there was a singular panacea, one answer to why crime goes up or down, and there isn't.
Is the opioid crisis at the root of a lot of it?
Narcotics in general is a huge driving force, generator behind crime in our community.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people compare the opioid crisis that we're going through now to the crack cocaine epidemic that started in the early 80s. And you see a lot of parallels that go along with that, across the country. This isn't something that's unique just to Louisville. And you see, in the 80s when crack cocaine broke out, the amount of violence that went through the roof for several years, we tend to be experiencing that now.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's more of a distribution side problem. And then when you look at the consumption side, a lot of the home break-ins, car thefts started to skyrocket in the middle 80s. And you kind of see that we're going through that now with the opioids. So it's not the total answer, but I think it's a driving force behind, one of the huge driving forces.
But so, for example, are you suggesting that in the 5th Division, in District 8, a lot of the property crime that people are experiencing, break-in thefts, those are people on the supply side, as you described,
yes,
trying to find money to feed a habit,
yes,
that is then contributing to the homicide epidemic,
yes,
and the violent crime we're seeing in other parts of town?
Yes, yes, it
and
is.
And so anybody that reads the newspaper or follows along, or so many people have had the opioid crisis touch them, their families, their friends personally. We've read and heard and learned that a big part of police officers' job and a new part of your training is how to respond to that, because you can't arrest your way out of the problem. Can you talk a little bit about that? Have you had any personal experiences or talked to any of the officers in the 5th Division who have, had to revive somebody that's overdosed?
Yes.
Or how often does that occur in the Highlands?
Surprisingly, it happens almost on a daily basis.
Wow.
Almost on a daily basis in the city every day. Multiple times a day, and for us in District 8, almost daily, we are administering naloxone to save an overdose life. It is devastating, and someone who is addicted, who arresting them is not going to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I am not the solution. The police department's not the solution for an addict. That takes care and treatment. And I say both, and a lot of people will say, well, treatment is care. But when I talk about care, I'm talking about something outside of the medical or mental health field. They need a support system around them to care for them. I've been blessed that, I haven't had to deal with opioid addiction. But professionally, we see it almost daily. And it weighs heavy. You see these people who just can't seem to see any other purpose in life beyond the drug that they're addicted to.
Mm-hmm.
And to see how that destroys them and the people around them. And not just their families, but the community as a whole and the effect that it has. And so it is a battle that we together have to fight, and we're very lucky here in Louisville to have different organizations that'll come along beside us and help fight that fight.
I can see your face, other people can hear your voice, and you are, despite being a tough guy, a military guy, you're a sincere, caring person. I know that just from talking to you. You've talked to me in the past, in fact, about, what it means to be a peace officer and not just a police officer. And so do you think that this experience that you and some of your officers are going through, dealing with addiction and the pain and suffering that families are experiencing in this real public health crisis, is it changing the culture in the department or in the division at all?
No human being, and we're all human beings, can get experience and see day after day the suffering of others. You'd have to be some kind of cold, callous, and we're not.
Mm-hmm.
We're much more than just a blue uniform with a badge and a gun.
Mm-hmm.
We're all sisters, brothers, fathers, sons, daughters, we're all citizens of Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
And this profession, you don't go into it for the money. You sure don't go into it for the glory.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more of questions than praise. You go into it because you have a heart. You care. You want to live a service-centered life. You want to be there for others. And, you know, police officers are a lot of type A's. You know, mm-hmm. they want to take control of a situation. They mm-hmm. want to come in. They want to solve the problem. They want to help by solving the problem. We're not the solution to that problem. And yet we have to see it every day. And that hurts. That you know, you see a lot of officers that, you know, they see that and they feel as if they've somehow failed their community. They've somehow failed that person. They've failed that neighborhood. And that's not an easy burden to bear. And so they, yes, it has changed. And I think it's opened a lot of eyes. You know, when I first got on the police department, even in the late 90s, there was still this whole, we have to be professional. We have to be separate from the community. We have to be above everything. And the early mid 2000s, we began to realize that no, that's not the way in which you create relationships. It's not the way in which you work together to solve problems. If you're constantly trying to separate yourself to be something different,
right.
you have got to be a
right.
part of
right.
that.
Right.
You got to exactly. And right. so I have seen that change, and it's still ongoing. You still have some of the older guys who still, you know, that been here 30, 35 years. But a lot of especially the younger officers, you know, the guys who've been around 10, 15 years or less, I really realized that, no, I'm still a citizen of the city of Louisville. I'm still a part of this, and we're going to work together and make change.
It's when we talk about the budget or when we talk about policy or when we talked about Chief Conrad recently, the same thing. Law enforcement's not separate. You can't
right.
solve some of the societal problems we have without considering law enforcement policy, housing policy, health policy, economic development. They're all pieces of a puzzle that fit together.
Absolutely.
And so,
yeah.
You know, if we can't deter addiction and mental health problems and even a lot of the property crime that is resulting from some of those things like mm-hmm. we described, it seems like crime prevention has to be a big part of it. Because
Absolutely.
Even though, you know, you're sincere in caring for these people who have addictions and that who have a lot of troubles, you still can't permit, and there's nothing okay with them breaking into my house or my neighbor's car in order to feed their habit. And so you all have a job to do. It's to enforce the law. It's to keep people safe,
mm-hmm.
and it's to prevent crime. So is it fair to say that, and I know you're still working out your overall strategy for the 5th Division in the Highlands, that crime prevention is a... is a major emphasis, and if so, what are you doing?
So crime prevention has got to be the forefront for the biggest reason, in my mind, there is that it prevents someone from becoming a victim,
mm-hmm.
and just as equally, it prevents someone from becoming a suspect.
Mm-hmm.
It prevents someone from becoming a part of the criminal justice system. And so crime prevention has got to be the forefront. Again, that's a major shift from the 80s and the 90s, where it was all about catch the bad guy, prosecute the bad guy, lock the bad guy up. Now we're more like stop the bad guy from ever becoming a bad guy.
Mm-hmm. You know,
so we don't have to label them as a bad guy if we can prevent it. And not only do you then prevent adding to the criminal justice system, but you prevent someone from becoming a victim. So what we do to try and get on the forefront, we use data analysis, because we don't have unlimited assets,
mm-hmm.
To see where crime is occurring. And then we do everything from what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have social media platforms. We reach out to, we try and create block watches to let the people in that community know so they can help. We have officers who will go out and meet with those block watch captains and those block watch groups, educate them about the crime that's going on, and then give them tips on how to prevent it, and then give them ideas of what you see, let us know. Because that's really what we need. We need the community to be the eyes and ears of us, and then we'll go and make any kind of enforcement action that needs to take place.
Well, this seems like just as good a time as any, although I can't tell based on our production schedule whether this event will have occurred by the time people are listening. But on Wednesday, August 23rd, that's the next in our series of Neighborhood Watch workshops. We've discussed that, you know, part of my goal, part of my strategic plan for District 8 is to help increase the number of active block watches that are registered with LMPD. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that for anyone who's out there listening who says, well, I'm part of a block watch. It's important to be registered with our police department so that they know you're out there and so that you're working together. We have 1,193 blocks in District 8. So the block I live on, the block you live on, the block that Restaurant X is located on. And according to our records, something fewer than 36 of the blocks are actually covered by an active block watch, and that's a very low number. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even if in a perfect world 100% of blocks had a block watch, that wouldn't mean crime would disappear entirely.
True.
But if we can move from 36 to 50 or 100 or 200 or 300 active, best practice, working block watches in cooperation with LMPD,
mm-hmm.
I'm confident, I'm guessing you are too.
Oh,
that
by far. So one of the biggest crime theories on why crime takes place is called routine activity theories. And routine activity theories is made up of several different parts, but one of the biggest crime deterrers, one of the biggest things that will prevent a crime from taking place is called an able guardian. And so when most people think of an able guardian, they think of the police. When in truth, we're not the biggest part of that. It's your neighbor
mm-hmm.
who is just watching.
My neighbor Nancy.
Neighbor Nancy, right. My neighbor Doug, you know.
Right.
Doug watching his neighborhood when he's around. He's got his eyes open and he knows what he's looking for. And we can educate people and help them to be on the lookout for what to look for.
Yeah, and so I don't know if I finished plugging it. This event is Wednesday, August the 23rd at 6 p.m. at the Douglas Community Center on Douglas Boulevard. It's a free workshop where if you come with your neighbors, we will talk about block watches, but then we'll actually break out into groups and we'll have officers on site to help groups get started, to fill out some basic paperwork, to start to learn about, you know, how you get a block watch up and running and, mm-hmm. and what it means to be successful. And it's not a lot of work and it doesn't take a lot of time, but there's some incredible tools that are available, everything ranging from home security surveys
mm-hmm.
to, you know, registering your video doorbell that you have so that if a crime occurs, police know where they can look for evidence and a lot more. It seems like, you know, block watches are something that come and go. We've seen the faded signs of this is a neighborhood watch from different eras mm-hmm. across the whole district. But this is our effort to sort of really, now that in the digital media age, mm-hmm. to get the block watches going again.
Yeah, and the great thing about the digital media age and social media and all the different platforms that are available through this, through registering, we now can then almost immediately, instantaneously communicate with people what's going on in your neighborhood, what we've seen. And they, in turn, can then almost immediately communicate with us.
Let's talk about that.
Sure.
Last thing on neighborhood watches, if you also go to the District 8 Crime Information page, you can see we've put together a neighborhood watch toolkit. It's about a 20-page PDF that has all the information and forms that you need to start one. So even if you can't make it to one of our workshops, which do repeat quarterly, and we're going to do them every 3 months for as long as I'm in office, you can go online and start to get that done yourself. But you're starting to talk about social media.
Mm-hmm.
And social media really is a beast to try to figure out how to manage and talk to people and communicate with people. One of the things I've tried to make clear that at this point, you cannot report a crime online, on Facebook,
correct.
On Nextdoor.
You
if you're a
right.
victim of
you
a crime can't. And you need to report something,
911.
Call 911 for an emergency.
911 for emergency.
Call 574-7111 and then hit
right?
5
yep.
for a non-emergency.
Correct.
Because, you know, we're all learning how to deal with social media. And again, mm-hmm. my office just got a Nextdoor agency account, so we can try to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The police have a, LMPD has a department-wide agency account. But at this point, my understanding is that all you can really do is send messages out. You're not monitoring Nextdoor.
Correct.
You're not,
we're not.
Because a lot of people, I think, and I think maybe rightfully so, you know, mm-hmm. they have the expectation that, look, like it or not, government, this is where we are now. This is how we're communicating amongst mm-hmm. ourselves. This is where we're reporting. You need to be on Nextdoor. You need to have a mechanism so that I can report my crime this way, or so that I can report my crime on Facebook or Twitter. I know you have not spent time in your career in the community relations office, which is sort of the central mm-hmm. communications office, but do you have thoughts about that or about what's possible and that what you would like to see as we move forward?
That would be great.
Okay.
It would be great. I would love to eventually have some sort of platform where a person could anonymously give tips and report crimes that were happening in progress,
mm-hmm.
That it would be monitored by someone like our MetroSafe. So we have a MetroSafe that takes all calls for service. Those calls for service are then put into a computer-aided dispatch system, which is a computer program that a dispatcher looks at. The program prioritizes that dispatch based off the information that's obtained from the call taker. And then it's eventually then fed either over radio or through wireless laptop to a patrol officer. I would love to see some type of program that basically eliminated the call taker
mm-hmm.
Because it wouldn't be over phone. Mm-hmm. It would, through the internet, go straight to the dispatcher, our CAD system. It would catch, based off the narrative that someone entered, whether it was an in-progress crime or something that they just found out about that's not going on now, or a tip, hey, I'm seeing this car driving through this neighborhood, doesn't belong, Florida tag, these are the people in it. And then if that pops up two or three times, you know, then that would raise the... I would love to see all of that happen online, so it would be much quicker, more instantaneous, and it could be completely anonymous.
Well, I've mentioned before on this podcast that, you know, I'm still figuring out social media, mm-hmm. and, you know, my perception at this point regarding the usefulness of it is that Facebook and Twitter have too much noise, and Instagram has too much noise for this. Even Nextdoor has a lot of noise because, you know, there are people that are having yard sale items, looking for a babysitter. But I think it's the best, closest thing we have. And so this is the first time I'm asking you this, mm-hmm. but maybe we could sometime try to reach out and find some of the most active Nextdoor users in District 8 or in the 5th Division, mm-hmm. get together, have a meeting with people, and just sort of talk about what people's expectations are, how they use the platform, how it might be useful for you mm-hmm. or not. Just try to head in that direction.
Yeah, I'm not the tech guy.
Yeah, well, we could bring a tech guy into the equation, too.
I would love if there would be some way to make that to work out someday. I think sooner the better, but I kind of see that as being the next step in how you call or help. I want need help from the police.
Well, to plug another one of your initiatives, and it's not new, but I believe you're trying to do it with more frequency. You're bringing Coffee with a Cop back in a big way.
You
can tell folks a little bit about that, but maybe we could find one of your Coffee and a Cop sessions and dedicate a portion of it on the topic of social media or something like that.
Absolutely. So what I've decided to do, what I'm trying to do, is nearly every Friday morning, I try to go to one of the local coffee shops or diners in the 5th Division, and be available for the people. No speeches, no agendas. I'm there open to the public to come and talk to me about whatever their concerns are.
Mm-hmm.
And so like tomorrow morning, because we're doing this on a Thursday.
So this will be, Friday, August the 18th.
August,
will have happened. We can't turn the podcast around that quickly.
Not quickly, not nearly a quickie. Okay. But I'll be at Fant Coffee, 2501 Grinstead.
Mm-hmm.
The following week, on the 25th, I'll be at Starbucks at Barstown Road and Highland.
Okay.
Right in the middle of District 8.
Sure.
I'm trying to keep it open. So if something were to come up in a community and I need to be there, I can go there quickly. So we're going to try and schedule maybe 1 or 2 weeks out.
Right.
But I'm going to be around. And the whole idea is to make those contacts, to listen to the people, so that I can hear exactly what it is they want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm there for anything and everything. The barking dogs, the robberies, the drunkenness, the loud noise.
Sure.
Anything and everything.
I'm going to ask you some questions about some of those things specifically, because I hear all of them too. But let's pretend that we're at the Starbucks, or let's say the Quills on Baxter Avenue.
Sure.
Not that we don't like Starbucks, but we love to support local businesses.
Absolutely.
That's in the original Highlands mm-hmm. neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And it seems that that Baxter-Bardstown corridor, which is, I'd say the north half of Beat 2. So for people that are listening, the divisions themselves are broken down into sub-areas called Beats.
Yep.
And Division 5, Beat 2... runs the Bardstown-Baxter corridor from about Eastern Parkway to Broadway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, that's the Bar District on the north side.
It is.
And people that look at our every 2-week neighborhood-by-neighborhood crime reports, who get the weekly crime update,
mm-hmm.
or who sign up for daily crime information, all of which, again, you can do on our website, and I'd encourage you to do that, will notice that crime is not spread equally among District 8, and a lot of it happens in that bar area. A lot perhaps attributed to the bars, a lot attributed perhaps to the density there. You mm-hmm. know, the houses are close together, there's more of them. My observation is that the original Highlands and the Cherokee Triangle have a special need because of the amount of crime and reports that happens down there and the amount of activity. Do you have any thoughts for listeners that are in that part of District 8 specifically on, how you intend to make sure that, the late night economy that we have going on there remains on balance a positive thing, something mm-hmm. that's good for business, mm-hmm. something that's good for the neighborhood, something that's good for our culture, but that doesn't drive them out of their homes?
Sure. And I'd like to say that this is a unique problem that's never happened in that area before, but it isn't. Some of the residents will remember the problems that took place at a bar called Cahoots.
Mm-hmm.
And you see some of the same problems beginning to arise again. And yet there are other bars that there's never been problems at, or very, very few.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look at, what is the difference? Why are there some places that have been there for years and there's no persistent trending problems?
Mm-hmm.
And yet now this place, like Cahoots, all of a sudden now we have all these problems that are persistent and reoccurring, and now mm-hmm. it's affecting the quality of life of the people around them. So what you look for, again, drugs tends to be the problem. If you see a place that's allowing outside pharmaceuticals to come in and people partake, and I'm not getting calls from that business owner
mm-hmm.
to come and deal with that problem,
mm-hmm.
that's a good idea that they're not going to be a good partner with the community.
So the responsibility starts with these business owners, and these bar owners specifically.
The responsibility starts with, they have plenty of staff. They're the entire time they're open, they know or should know the number of people they have there, if they have underage drinking going on, if they have people using drugs on their property and they're not calling the police, that lets me know right away they're not going to be a good partner with us and the community at large. Second, the community calls us and we address issues that are going on, crime-related. We do some enforcement actions. And if I go meet with that business owner and they smile and shake their head at me, and then nothing changes.
Mm-hmm.
They continue to go about their day-to-day operations as if I'd never had that conversation. That lets me know, again, we're going to have a problem with that business. We have a good metro government agency called Inspections, Permits, and Licensing. And we also have both local ABC and state ABC that handles liquor licensing and zoning for businesses like this that will often come beside us and begin to go through what's often a lengthy process to either have that business closed
mm-hmm.
Or there's enough enforcement action through fines and penalties that eventually the business will come alongside with what the residents want.
Right. And we obviously don't want to, we don't want to threaten the businesses or harm the businesses, but maybe it's a good idea for us to hold a joint meeting with all the bar owners and lay out very clearly what our expectations are and how we'd like for them to be our partners in this case.
Absolutely.
Because, tactically, I have no idea whatsoever about military or police strategy, but mm-hmm. tactically, it's not just the number of officers on the street, is it? I mean, you could make the bar district a militarized zone, and that wouldn't be any fun for anybody.
Right, absolutely. And that's not something that we do in America. That's not...
Right.
Well, yeah, well, you know, we don't do that. That's not who and what we are. And, you know, I to some degree, it does have an impact. The number of officers who are there will have an impact on the amount of crime that takes place. There's enough empirical evidence,
sure.
I can say that's without a doubt. So the number of officers who work in an area do impact the amount of crime that takes place.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we don't want to put a cop on every corner. We don't want to have, that's not, it doesn't, not what we're looking for. It's
and
not
there are real,
what
and
we
there
are
real resource issues.
There is, absolutely. We don't have enough police officers to do that.
Right.
And that's not, you know, where we want to go. I believe, again, back when we first started our conversation here, it's through partnerships that we improve. It's through working together. And I wish someone in that bar district would reach out to us and we could start a conversation,
mm-hmm.
and get together as a group,
mm-hmm.
and talk about how they can help us and how we can help them,
mm-hmm.
So that we don't have problems like a cahoots again.
Well, I've talked about trying to do my best to secure some additional manpower for the bar area,
mm-hmm.
on weekends, you know, just because that's a special time and location in District 8 where we have an extreme amount of activity, and you know, we're not talking about dozens extra officers, but of course I'd love to see a couple extra bodies, and I'm sure if we could figure that out, you'd use them.
I would, absolutely.
Are there any other resources? I mean, just being creative. I mean, would it help to have a police substation at Mid-City Mall? Would it help to have more surveillance cameras? If I mean, I'm just throwing these things out there.
Sure.
Do you have a wish list of...
There are lots of things.
...of anything particular that...
So, most of these places... hire some sort of security staff. Some of them are police officers and some of them are not.
And I will say, just really quickly, we have some excellent business owners and bar owners in our community. A special shout out to Tom O'Shea, who's a member of our District 8 Advisory Board, and I think does an excellent job. He's not the only one, but he's one that immediately comes to mind,
absolutely.
So I thought I'd recognize him.
Yeah, and the thing is in the short time that I've been there, and then just 3 or 4 weeks, his name has come up a couple of times as how what a great partner he is in the community,
mm-hmm.
with helping out. We've had an person robbed by the Walgreens, and one of the local bars across the street, the manager comes out and goes, "Hey, I think I have video." And so they do help. And some of them are great partners.
Who have a vested interest in a safe environment for their clientele, and their investments, their significant investments.
Do a great job. I wish all of them were that way. And I think that's kind of what we're shooting for. Wish list. I would love to have an extra 2 or 3 people just for the weekends,
mm-hmm.
Friday and Saturday nights.
Mm-hmm. So a little
just
extra
for
manpower.
The bar. That would be great. Some cameras in the alleyways,
mm-hmm.
some lighted alleyways.
Now we're talking.
I would love to have some lighted alleyways along the backsides of those bars, especially near where the parking lots, where it's all dark and it's not easily visible. I would love
now,
to have
this
some
is,
of that
and
stuff.
And I'm sorry to interject, but alleys is one of those parts of our infrastructure that are sort of severely neglected. You know, they're roads, just like any other road, but they don't make it onto the paving budget. We don't have a lot of money for lights and infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And our alleys are in disrepair.
Mm-hmm.
They've had years of potholes and darkness, and they're overgrown and they're overstrewn. And I'm convinced, too, that safe alleys will help make for a safer district. That's a kind of, you know, that's sort of a public works issue.
It is.
And so I think that's a great opportunity where the police, who carry so much cachet in this community,
mm-hmm.
because people respect the job that you do, they respect the size of your budget, they respect the size of your labor force, that if we can work together on some of these environmental design improvements,
mm-hmm.
lighting, alleys, maintenance of property, that's a real opportunity for us. And I'll also throw this out because everybody that's listening cares about it. Part of our parking problem is because the alleys are not adequate. You know, Bardstown Road has a lot of parking at the back of those businesses,
mm-hmm.
but the way that you access them is
through the
alleys.
Yes,
and
sir.
So when they're dark and when they're potholed and when there's no consistent signage from Bardstown and Baxter showing you where the parking in the rear is, that leads to...
Nobody wants to make that turn and go down that alley.
So we'll revisit the alley conversation, but...
Sure.
But thank you for raising that.
Oh, yeah.
You were wish listing.
Oh, yeah, wish listing. So another thing I think that would help, so lighting, cameras, some extra personnel. So there's another theory in crime. It's called broken windows.
Sure. Oh, I'm big on litter and cleanliness as anybody.
And then while that's not a police issue, downtown they have a group of people who go about their day beautifying downtown, picking up, cleaning up. If they see something, helping call the police to help address issues. I would love to have something like that for both of my bar districts that could help with...
Now, what's your other bar district, just for Frankfurt, the record? Frankfurt Avenue. Okay.
Frankfurt Avenue.
A growing bar district.
Yeah, the growing bar district. Sure. So, yeah, Frankfurt and the Bardstown Baxter.
Well, it's people would think I put you up to that, but in fact, for listeners, we are studying. I have a team of business owners for several weeks and months now that has been studying the possibility of what's called a management district or a business improvement district, like the Louisville Downtown Management District downtown that you speak of. And we're not done with our exploration into that yet, but it's entirely possible that we could see some effort towards something like that. That would help keep the overall appearance of the area better, more beautiful, cleaner, have some extra sets of eyes on the street to help with street people, panhandlers, homeless, that sort of a thing. So more news on that coming soon.
Oh, good. Good to do.
All right. We're running out of time, so let me hit a couple of high-level or a couple of discrete I don't want to call them complaints, but issues that people have and ask me about that seem to be really hard to get under wraps.
Sure.
And I just have to put it out there for the record. Motorcycles, the people that, you know, rev their engines and drive people crazy. You know, part of it is that Bardstown Road is laid out like a highway, more so than Frankfurt Avenue, your other sort of main commercial drag that's only one lane in every direction and it has parking tees. And so, you know, the nature of the road is different.
Sure.
And Bardstown Road for generations has been a cruising strip. Is there anything that you can tell the people listening that we can do about motorcycle modes? I've tried to get signage from the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet. I've done whatever I can, but can you just talk a little bit about the challenges that are associated with enforcing
that? One of the biggest challenges is the officer's got to hear it. And so it's almost rarely does a motorcycle rider do that in front of a marked police car.
Right.
Usually it's the citizen who calls the police that complains about the noise or drag racing or whatever the issue is when it comes to motorcycles. And by the time the police are there, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they were to happen to come across them, they don't make that noise in front of us. And so it's one of those crimes or one of those statutes and ordinances that the officer has to witness. I can't use a citizen's complaint as enough probable cause to issue a citation to someone that I didn't hear do it.
It's almost more of a cultural issue. It sort of has to do with the environment and the character of Bardstown Road. Like you said, if it changes somewhat, then maybe that's not really the appropriate place to do that anymore.
True.
How about speeding? You know, we're trying to tackle speeding, through all sorts of different public works and environmental design solutions, everything from speed humps to the flashing signs. Mm-hmm. We're doing a Bardstown Road pedestrian safety improvement study. But what about the law enforcement side of speeding? Are you guys, should you be out there doing more to stop people, or what are you doing? Can you let people know about that?
We do a great many things. Speeding, again, we use the community to direct us when it comes to our speeding enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I have personnel in the division that's their sole job. That's all they do is handling complaints and speeding investigations, and where they actually go out and run what's most commonly referred to as a speeding trap or running a stop sign.
We all love speed traps.
Yeah. I wish that were true. Some people don't care for them.
Yeah.
But yes, we do speeding enforcement. It is a necessary responsibility. We have to be doing it. It goes beyond just people speeding, but the safety concerns associated with that, especially in a densely populated rural residential area, we've got to be doing it, and we do as much of it as we can. I think the visual deterrence that you speak of with the flashing signs and even some of the roadway signs that we put up that are solar powered that post at a speeder speed, bringing to attention. Because some people, you know, they just get in the groove driving the same thing every day and they don't realize. And so that brings it to their attention that they're speeding. We do all of that. The crime prevention through environmental design stuff where you talk about the speed humps and that stuff, I think is a necessary thing. Again, you get back into the whole budget stuff, though, is the money.
And there's a culture around it. Again, the same thing. You have to, people have to be aware and recognize what they're doing and the importance of it.
Truly.
Finally, because we are running out of time, and we'll have to have you back again, so long as you are the 5th Division Commander, you're as important person in this community and district as I am, truly. You know, that's how important the police and our safety is to the people of this district, and we really appreciate it. But is there anything we can do more to get people to lock their doors and put their, not leave their valuables in their cars? Because I will say this, and again, for people who don't get my e-newsletter, please go online and sign up and get it. Every 2 weeks, we send out a map of your neighborhood, where you live or where your business is, that has a little pinpoint for every crime that's happened in the past 2 weeks and a little, you know, short narrative of what happened, you know, 10 words or something like that. And I count every week how many crimes there are and how many of them say unlocked vehicle, unlocked garage, unlocked this or that. And it's usually as much as 1/3. So, I mean, we could almost instantly reduce our crime statistics, not the statistics or everything,
right,
by double digits and perhaps up to a large fraction.
Huge chunk.
Is it just talk about it just a little bit and give folks your parting message. And
So please, please, please lock your door. Please, please, please take your valuables inside with you when you go in at night. If you're going to go to the gym, take your purse with you. Invest in a lock. Lock it up in the gym. If you're going to go into one of our local businesses, and enjoy yourself in the evening with some of your friends, don't leave your laptop and your purse in your car and lock your door when you go inside. You're right. Some of them, consistently every week, it's at least 1/3. I've seen it as high as 60%.
Wow.
So as high as 60% of our car break-ins and even our burglaries. If you're going to leave your house, please lock your door.
Leave a light on.
Leave a light on. Leave the back light on. Light that alleyway up.
Mm-hmm.
A light is just as much a capable guardian as another person.
Mm-hmm.
Criminals don't like to be seen when they do what they do. And so it's only through education. I think it's, you know, you get comfortable at home and you just don't think that that's going to happen to you, and then it does.
Well, I will give a shout out to all the people of District 8, because if we've been reporting the numbers and the crime statistics on unlocked doors over the past several weeks, they've gotten better.
Damn.
And I'm confident they're going to continue to get better. And unfortunately, I read a lot of reports where it says window smashed.
Yes.
Someone broke the window and grabbed it. And then that's not people's fault. And that's when you have men and women out on the street working hard to stop that.
Yes, it is.
Okay, good. Well, don't take it easy on them.
No way.
Care for them and for their well-being if they have a problem. But
and a lot of them do. That goes back to the heroin that we were talking about and the opioid crisis.
Yeah.
Most of those people are the most. Most of those people are, that's what that comes from.
Well, Major Aubrey Gregory, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. We know that you're going to be visible in the community. We'll see you at the Neighborhood Watch Workshop and hopefully subsequent such events.
Absolutely.
We'll have communications and conversations with folks about social media, with bar owners and all sorts of things, and people see us together a lot in the future.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Have a great rest of the day.
You too.
Take care. Thanks for listening to 8 More Miles, the Louisville Metro Council District 8 podcast. Please stay in touch with our office. Visit our website at www.tinyurl.com/cmconed8. And once you're there, please subscribe to receive our biweekly e-newsletter.